Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Y'all, it's November.
It is.
The holidays are beginning.
It's Christmas, right?
Halloween is over. Christmas has begun.
Yeah.
You know, we are in the middle of a brief, cool weather thing, so it actually sort of feels like that could be the case.
Boo.
False fall, part two?
It's like ending tomorrow. Like,
Yeah, it is.
But look, anyway.
Enjoy your cool weather while you can have it, you cold weather loving freaks.
It's going to be months of it, right?
Wait a minute. Thursday, the high is 68.
Oh, Randy.
68 is acceptable.
Randy better put on a big fur coat to protect his little chilly body.
Look, I moved down here from Colorado. I've experienced cold. I don't ever want to experience it again.
I fled like a baby.
Well, come February, we'll have an ice storm like no other, probably.
That's true. It's a notable week of comics.
It is.
There's quite a few new things. A few new things, but also the third of the Absolute titles, which, yep. Spoilers, we all really liked.
It's true.
We'll talk a little more about that. Yep. But before we get to all that, let's talk about a new thing we're doing in end of November and December, extended holiday hours.
Yep.
Yes.
That's right. We're going to see. We've been 11 to 7 every day since the pandemic, and yep. It's worked out pretty well for us. But every so often we have people coming in the last few minutes on weekends wanting to do some shopping, and we decided for the holidays to try it out.
Yep.
So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, starting on Black Friday, November 29th, I believe it's 29th.
Yes.
We will be open until 8 p.m. on weekends.
Yes.
If you wish this to continue... Yeah. Come in between 7 and 8 and buy thousands of dollars of merchandise. Right.
And I know that some people are out there listening and they're like, oh, they're going to open up in-store gaming again. And that is not the case.
We still don't have room.
That one's unfortunately a non-starter.
We'll visit one of our
multiple breweries that we associate with.
We're partnering with Cellus Brewery. We're part of the third level.
Yeah, we might as well be. We seem like drunkards based on that. Yes. But I like it.
Enjoy your magic D&D, Lorcana.
All at once.
All at once.
with a beer in one hand and games in another.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. The only way to play all of these games.
We have heard your cries. We have seen you clawing at the door while I'm counting down the register, and I just shake my head sadly at you. We will try and accommodate a little bit and see how it goes.
Give him the Rorschach, you whisper no.
Presently, yes, but I might be about to become nice Rorschach.
Nice shot.
Nice shot.
1 hour left.
You're not trapped.
And then I chomp some beans behind the counter.
They come in, and then Dave's going to close the door behind him and lock it and be like, you're trapped in here with me.
That's right. They're like, did you even heat those beans? I'm like, they're good, just as good as his.
Human bean juice. Nom, 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 nom. If people don't remember Watchmen, we sound like maniacs right now.
Yep. Hilarity.
Can you forget Watchmen? I don't know if you can.
Weather talking Watchmen. That's what we bring you here at the Roadcast. All right. We got some games to talk about. There's Star Wars Unlimited has its third set, Twilight of the Republic.
Yep.
Which is the Clone Wars factions.
Okay.
This has been a very popular collectible card game. We actually did not sell out of it right away for once.
So and there's even a small amount of pre-release packs, although I don't know if that'll be the case when this goes out. But
we'll see.
Sometimes people are looking for those, and just at the moment, I've got like four or five in there, I think.
We've got pre-release starters and boosters.
Yep.
There is a new Pathfinder thing, Pathfinder War of the Immortals. Which is actually sort of for playing at, like, the immortal lever. There's a god who dies. His essence and war-infused blood reign across all existence in the event known as God's Reign and creates, like, mythic heroes and monsters. And so it's basically like playing, like, epic-level D&D, essentially.
Yeah, I was flipping through this, and it looks very cool. I saw looking at the broad spectrum of deities represented, that there was, like, oh, that's Maui from, like, Moana.
Yep.
Or that is to say, from real like Polynesian lore, but like definitely, they were taking a visual cue.
I just think that I can fight the rock in this.
Yeah, you would fight for the rock.
Oh,
or,
right. Fight for
or be
the
like
rock.
An avatar of him.
Fight for the rock.
Okay. Interesting.
But yeah, the idea. I was under the impression that it was also possible that you Now, I don't know this for sure, but you might be able to play, like, even starting characters who are, like, infused with some sort of Hercules-type energy, and your bonuses are geared for, like, kind of godly feats and things like that.
Yeah.
Now, if don't not, quote me on that, but anyway, just flipping through it the other day, it looked pretty
if
neat.
If it's not in there, Dave will write you a one sheet and just put it in.
That's right. We'll work out something.
Starfinder, their spacefaring version, yep. is currently in playtest mode. There's a Starfinder playtest.
Yep.
And they put out a new adventure that is called Empires Devoured. There's the Aslanti Star Empire and the Vescarium. These are two of their...
Yeah.
They're like empires of bad guys.
Yeah.
They are signing a peace treaty.
Uh-oh.
And so the heroes are attending the peace talks.
Oh, that sounds pretty good. I'm going to bet there's... sly political machinations and attempted sabotage.
There might be.
And maybe somebody's trying to open up a black hole there or something
like
that.
Pathfinder Player Core 2 Pocket Edition, for those of you who like the Pocket Edition rule books and can read small things, which I am not.
Yeah, but they've got the right price, and they do a nice job with them.
This is all their extra classes and ancestries and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The Magnus Archives RPG. Now, I've never listened to this podcast. Dave,
it's really good.
It is
good. Me and Nick have listened to it.
I always get that and Knife Point mixed up in my brain.
Knife Point is the predecessor and is the kind of more sporadic and asymmetrical one. Like, it might last from 15 minutes to an hour and a half. But Magnus Archives was a more codified thing where it was always like half an hour.
And this is Magneto's journals, right?
But it's
so it is actually... The idea is that there was this like sort of secret society, almost like the BPRD and Hellboy.
Mm-hmm. A little on the smaller side, though.
A little on the smaller side that's like an English thing. And they have like all these notes that they've compiled over like decades or centuries.
Yeah.
And there is sort of a... one guy has been assigned to go and transfer these all to audio tape.
Yep.
I think so that they've got options. If there's ever fire or whatever, they'll have it recorded. And so he essentially, the narrator, always reads what are supposed to be first person accounts from somebody else of some weird shit that went down. And they're very interesting, creepy stories. Like really. Like, do you remember the vampire one, Nick? And, like, the vampire one is not like any vampire story you've heard before.
There's been a lot of good ones, and I like that it starts out very...
It ranges from, like, just sort of like, oh, that's eerie, that's creepy. Yeah. Like, the person who sent in the first one, I think, something in a box, like a key in a thing of ice. Do you remember this?
I do.
Or the weird thing scuttling up the side of, like, a college dorm, I think.
Yeah.
There's some great creepy imagery. Anyway, Monty Cook has done the game. It uses the cipher system.
And you're probably like, what do you play with? Because like, they're all done in one adventures or something. It's like, the podcast starts, you see like...
There's meta stories,
and there's crossovers with stories, and there's like some connective tissue.
Yep.
So, Monty Cook, what is their most known...
Okay. I mean, Cypher itself, but I forget if there's, like... There is one system that you... Randy, is there a system that used Cypher that was notable? That was the one?
No, they've done a bunch of side things. I don't think they've done, like, a license.
Okay.
This is maybe their first license.
But, like, Monty Cook is one of those guys who's been, like, a RPG designer for forever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
And I think he... Doesn't he, like... Is he one of those people who, like, consults on the Dungeons & Dragons and stuff, too?
Yes, I think that's right. Or
I might be thinking of Robin Laws, but
I think it was fourth edition. I think he was big in fourth edition.
Yeah, but anyway, this includes like lots of the lore from it. So I imagine that some people who just like the podcast, which by the way, you should just try the podcast.
Yes,
some people like that. It'll be cool because you get all the lore sort of in one place. It probably works as sort of like an encyclopedia of that too, or a codex.
But we got the main book, and we also got the
player's like a player's guide. Yep. Yeah.
There is a new game from 25C. These guys make a lot of good games, called Run, Run, Run. I don't know what the deal is with it. I'm trying to remember. You're cat adventurers.
Working
together to explore a pyramid and stop evil dog mummies. I don't know about this anti-dog propaganda, but otherwise that sounds like fun. It's co-op, for the record.
Fun.
Yeah. Then there's Hack and Slash Deluxe, which is a Steve Jackson game.
Yep.
And finally, the Boop plush.
Right.
Boop is a game. It's a two-player game where you're trying to boop cats off your bed.
Yep. What's the holiday one?
I don't remember.
I know it's not like Merry Bootmas, no, but it's something like that.
There's a Halloween version.
Is it Boop the Halls?
Is Boop the Halls? Anyway, there's now a cute cat plush.
Yes. It is, I have to say, a great design, so you should consider it.
Yes, for sure. All right, let's talk comics for the week, and let's start off with Absolute Superman number one. This is the third of the Absolute line,
yep.
And I believe, are we all settled that Absolute Wonder Woman was the best one, but this is close?
You know, they're my top two, but even comparing, I really liked Snyder's Batman too. I think it's kind of unfair to compare them, because they each do kind of actually stake out different territory.
No, Dave, we have to compare them.
I think
Wonder Woman, for me, Wonder Woman is the best. Batman and Superman are tied right now.
I've gotten it's the same way these are different characters, and these are different versions of the characters, so that, like, Wonder Woman is not like the typical Wonder Woman, but I like them for their differences, and that's not just fence-sitting. I actually think that they've all come through.
Sounds like fence-sitting to me.
Well, if you want, I'll condemn Batman.
Thank you. Condemn Batman.
Scott Snyder is shit.
Yes. Condemn the Batman, Dave.
No, it's like it's like the others are, on a 5-star scale, are 4.5 stars for me, and Batman was 4.
Yeah.
So that's my condemnation.
I will say,
it's doomed to be really, really good.
Take that, Batman.
I will say Jason Aaron kind of creates new mythos and kind of new...
This is a bigger rebuild than we expected.
Yeah, and they take on Krypton?
I had to wrap my head around it the first time. I was like, this is a lot of stuff to change but I, now that I've kind of read through it again, I really like it. I really love what he does with the idea of the Superman symbol and where it comes from.
What can we say about that? Do we want to get into
specific... Let's leave that up. I think all we want to say as a general thing is that this is very much Jason Aaron doing Superman as a ground-up organizer type, basically.
Right. And he is not a... It is the sort of hook would be considered Superman without the Kents.
It's labor versus corporations is definitely the theme.
Yeah,
both
sure.
On Krypton and on Earth.
Yeah.
He doesn't start in Kansas.
And it's a heightened Earth. You know, it is not our regular Earth. It is... We think that these are the same shared Earth with Absolute Batman and Absolute Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
But right now, all the books seem to be contained within their kind of
right.
Story.
Like, they're not crossing over or talking about, like, Batman's only really dealing with Gotham stuff.
Right. Wonder Woman is
in Hell and Gateway City.
In the same way, Batman and Wonder Woman are a Batman and Wonder Woman that we've really never seen before. Like, and these characters have been interpreted over and over again, but. They were definitely versions we've seen. This is a new interpretation of Superman. The closest we've seen of this Superman is maybe
Grant Morrison's
starting New 52, and he got away from that really quickly. This is very
it
much
looks like
a,
it's going to be where this one lives.
Yeah, and he is
working class Superman, or that is kind of going to be the vibe. And you're going to talk about the art, probably.
I was going to say this art is spectacular.
It's another one of those cases. Like, the art has been really good in all of these.
Yeah.
I think my personal favorite is the Wonder Woman artist because of that Guy Davis type vibe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't believe how detailed this was.
Really, really
like the
gorgeous.
Backgrounds and the sense of setting on Krypton, the new look for Superman.
I have to say, I like the look. I like his kind of energized, like, hand kind of stuff. It is cool looking.
There's a tweak to Superman's powers in a way that I thought was really interesting.
He's just, it's Rafa's hand of all. I'm sure he's been around.
Yeah,
done
I'm sure
a ton
he has
of stuff,
too. Yeah.
But this is some amazing work by him.
You know what some of these remind me of? When CrossGen started developing artists, and they had, like, Greg Land and Mike Perkins and Steve Epting. And those guys, because I think they were getting to do genres that were a little outside the normal superhero ones. And this was, like, their time to shine. They put their all into it. Like, I felt like it was some of the best art that they'll ever do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same is going on with the Absolute people. This feels like they knew full well that they were going to all be looked at, and so they did some of the absolute best art possible.
Don't sleep on this.
No,
this is if you're a Superman fan of any stripe, or don't even like Superman because of, like,
he's too goody two shoes.
Check this out. Aaron kind of injects a different vibe to it.
Right,
that
there's
you're
a touch
not...
more edge going on here, because these are not easy worlds to live in for any of these characters. They're all going through a struggle right now that's maybe a little bit more than the characters are used to. And I think we did order pretty well on this one.
We got a lot.
So yep. it should last a bit longer than the others, but it's still going to go fast.
So there's also some DC All-In this week.
Yep.
New ones. So we've got the new Batgirl, yep. which is...
Cassandra Cain.
Cassandra Cain.
Yep.
Who I've liked. I've always liked.
Yeah, she's got a great.
My favorite Batgirl is Stephanie Brown, but I like this one.
Yep. It's kind of it is kind of like the Robins. I actually like all the Batgirls.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously Barbara Gordon is fantastic. I like Stephanie Brown too, and I think she's my second favorite. But I still got to give it to Barbara.
It's like the Robins. Each one kind of brings a different something different to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's unusual that you can pull that off, because usually there's one where you're like, yeah, nobody really liked this one.
And if you don't know who Cassandra is, she was bred as a child to be like the perfect assassin.
And she is Shiva's daughter, Lady Shiva, who is the most deadly combatant in the DC universe.
And Kane, another one of those
assassin.
He was a master martial artist who trained Batman when he was training doing his initial martial arts training. Only, you know, he turned out to be a horrible dude.
Yes.
And so they do a neat thing with that they cover in this a bit, and has always been a little bit part of Cassandra. It just depends on whether the writers pay attention to it a lot. Which is that initially she couldn't speak. They didn't train her to speak.
Right.
And so but she could read body language and stuff like that at the level as if it was a language. Like, she would pick up words and things or recognize doubt and fear and all these things at like a way higher level than any normal person would.
I think it's sometimes hard to pull off on the page. It varies with artists, but when you get an artist like this, which is Takeshi Miyazawa, the guy who did, was it Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane?
Yeah.
And some Runaways.
He's changed a little bit,
He's changed a little bit.
But it looks really good.
But his flow of action, including Shiva, who is one of DC's most notable
assassins
and martial artists,
mm-hmm. She'd be the kind of person that, if Batman or Deathstroke ran into her, would be like, I gotta watch out.
Yeah. Yep. But this is like an action-packed first issue.
Yeah, Shiva comes to Batgirl, and...
It's a mother-daughter fight and talk.
And they're being hunted by a warrior of warriors, and it's got some cool action and a good setup. I'm very curious to see where they go with this.
Yeah, and too.
There's a new JSA. Written by Jeff Lemire. I know you're thinking, hey, didn't the JSA just finish? Yes, Jeff Johns took like 3 or 4 years to write 12 issues.
I thought it was headed.
It finally finished.
Okay, I thought it had one more issue.
I think
this is a through line from that, I believe.
Yes.
Like, you know, if you've read that, this isn't a complete reboot, but
if
it's
you
just,
haven't read it, you don't need to read this.
Right.
So yeah, this is the...
You said if you haven't read it, you don't need to have read it.
You don't need to have read it, yes.
Yeah, yeah. You said this, and I was like, well, you should read this.
No, you don't need to have read it to read this.
Yes.
They're used Saint Roche. They're sort of like New Orleans, which I kind of liked.
Yep. That's the second lesser seen city that DC's broken out in the last few weeks. Gateway City for Wonder Woman is one of them, and Saint Roche, which is one that I always want to see more of.
So the Justice Society now is a mixture of the existing Golden Age heroes. I think mostly Alan Scott, Wildcat, Jay Garrick, and their children. So it's mixing in the Infinity Inc. people like the new Doc Midnight, Jade and Obsidian, Hourman, and of course Dr. Fate.
Is the Hourman, is that Rex?
No, it's his son.
Oh, it's his son.
Tex.
Tex Tyler,
yep.
That's not true.
But it's true. And Jesse Quick is in here, too.
Oh, I see Sand is in here, too.
Yeah. It's a good mix of like legacy characters and original characters. They are operating out of the new Watchtower, which will be explained in Justice League, coming out in a couple of weeks. It's basically a straightforward team book with some of the legacy characters in it.
Yeah, and, it seems like they did want to, and they're already playing with the idea of struggling to kind of use, see if the morality of sort of the Golden Age era, what seems like that purer, simpler morality, if it still works in the present. I know Obsidian in particular seemed like he was like getting all hardcore in an interrogation, and they're hey, simmer down, boy.
Yeah, we don't do that here.
Yep, chill.
On the off the beaten path a little bit more, we've got Little Batman Month 1.
The little baby Batman.
There's an animated series. We talked about this trailer. It's basically sort of a weird thing where...
the original one was a holiday thing, right? It was like a Christmas...
Yes. So Batman is Bruce Wayne. He's a dad. And Damian is a little kid, cartoony style. And they are very much like dad and kid, more so than they've ever been in the comics. Damian doesn't understand why Bruce Wayne pretends to be Bruce not Batman, why they have to do all this non-Batman-y stuff. And
that's actually accurate to the regular comic Damian too.
It's very cute.
But this is like, you know, there's a Calvin and Hobbes or Scotty Youngish vibe to this. And they're going to be probably putting out these occasional one shots. But yeah,
this is a miniseries.
Oh, it's a miniseries.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So yeah, if you're looking for like a Batman comic to show to your kids, who they might be just getting into comics and really like that appeal of that sort of like lighter and more cartoony style. Check it out. What's it called? Just Little Batman?
Little Batman, Month One.
Month One.
As in year one. He's too small to have a whole year.
The cover is an homage to Batman Year One, which is so weird to me. One of the darkest Batman stories.
Yep. jumping over to Marvel, we have Kahori, Reshaper of Worlds. This is a original Mohawk character from the What If series.
Yeah.
And it ties into one of the Lokis from the What If series.
Oh, wow.
This is essentially a sequel to that episode. That episode was really, really good.
It was.
And they have a... It's also under the Marvel Voices remit, so there's some discussion about how they made this original character, and the actress who played... There's an interview with the actress who played her, or voiced her. This is a good follow-up. It's got guest stars Moon Knight... And a couple other Marvel guest stars.
What's her name? Kahori?
Kahori. She has like sort of cosmic powers.
Oh.
I really like that What If, and I thought this was a good follow-up.
Okay.
Recommend it.
This is, by the way, the What If animated thing, not one of the What If comics.
Right. Correct. Right. She is one. This is maybe the first, I think, original character created for the MCU. Like completely created in the MCU. We have Negasonic Teenage Warhead, which gets a one-shot. This was... Apparently this was a digital comic, but there's new stuff in here.
Right.
And, basically, you put the premise on the sign, Dave. I forget what the premise was.
I don't remember what the premise was. If you want to know,
the TVA is coming for her.
That's right.
And Deadpool has to help her out.
Right. Yep, that's it.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of Deadpool? Are you a fan of Negasonic Teenage Warhead? Well, then, obviously, no just get it, dumbass.
FML. This is the Kelly Sue DeConnick, who... Co-created the new Captain Marvel, did Bitch Planet. This is her return to comics. She's been out for a while with art by David Lopez. And
FML, which famously stands for Friendly Monkey Love.
Yes, yes. It's a bunch of teenagers in a band, and there's some weird stuff going on.
They're on some witchcraft.
It's a little bit more... They're kind of like headbangery types.
Yeah.
There's a little bit more... this is like the metalhead kids.
Yeah.
I think... And I feel like even though this is kind of like a little sort of a dark adventure for him, I'm going to guess she's working a little bit of autobiography in here, too.
Mm-hmm. Something is killed in the children number zero. Nick, you read this.
I did. And this is not... Doesn't function exactly like a zero issue really does, which is usually
like
catching readers... Kind of catching readers up with the history so people can just jump in. This one is a full-on story that sort of takes place right after a huge event that Erica Slaughter was involved in, kind of one of her first monster hunts in a lot of ways.
Like a little lost tale.
Yeah, and definitely does some big moving chess pieces around as things are happening in the background that she has no clue about. It was a really good issue. I assume this is just a one shot, but I don't know.
I think so, yeah.
But I guess it'll definitely lead into the next story arc. It was a really good issue.
Okay.
I love the artwork by Werther Delaledra.
It's a long name.
He's great. I love the coloring of the book. But yeah, it was really good. If you have any interest, go pick up the trades and then
you wouldn't want to start with this though.
I wouldn't, but
this is going to be a cool thing to read for people who've been keeping up.
But there are 8 trades. We've got them all. I highly recommend this series.
On the other end of the spectrum, we've got My Little Pony Classics Reimagined, The Odyssey. If you wanted to see the Greek story of The Odyssey reenacted with ponies, here you are.
Like I said, what I want to see is the scene where Odysseus returns and, along with his son, slaughters all the creepy suitors of his wife. I'm going to assume it's like a pony stampede.
Yes.
And they're just like clip-clopping all over those guys.
Uh-huh.
But you know what? My Little Pony is a very cute and adorable show, and The Odyssey by them sounds fun.
Boom has a new all-ages book called The Fade, which is about a college student who is trying to get to sort of this fantasy world. And has really nice art. It reminds me of these sort of like Steven Universe and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And Distillery has a new book called One for Sorrow, written and drawn by Jamie McKelvey, who you may know from the other half of creating Captain Marvel.
And also Wicked and Divine.
Yep. This is about 1900. Is
yeah.
that 20th century? The beginning of the turn of the century? Turn of the century,
yes.
I think is it.
Turner D. Century. That's the greatest villain of them all.
The East End of London. There is a vigilante known as the Magpie.
Is he the one who on the cover looks like a plague doctor?
That is correct. There are wealthy people talking to a spiritualist who is mostly seems to be a con man or con woman, I guess. There is a illegal gambling parlor. There's a lot going on in this. But it is a interesting sort of turn of the century vigilante caper book. Another one of those.
I gotta say, Distillery is not putting out the same old
nope.
stuff. So there you go.
Yep. There are also some trades worth mentioning. Cyberpunk 2077 gets the omnibus treatment. So there's a trade of those collected. So like three or four trades in one
mm-hmm.
big trade.
Mm-hmm.
Primer Clashing Colors, that is the new DC character who can
like the kind of a YA hero.
Yeah.
I
forget what her powers. Something cool with like colors with paint.
It has to do with paint, and I don't know
it's
quite
like
what it is either.
Type powers.
Yes.
This is the miniseries that's not collected into a trade.
This is a rare character who has been breaking out, who is an original character
for
and
sure.
not like, you know, Batman Jr.
She is now meeting up with the Teen Titans. In this volume. Speaking of Teen Titans, we've got the Starfire by Kemi Garcia
yeah.
and Gabriel Piccolo. They've done the Robin,
Beast Boy,
Raven.
This is
their Starfire.
This is the DC has a YA line of graphic novels that's probably like 30 graphic novels long. Each one is more or less standalone, and occasionally they get a sequel if there's enough interest. But this one is the biggest success within it is all the Teen Titans ones.
Yes.
And the Teen Titans aren't just by themselves, like this is like it's
like a sub line within the line.
Yeah,
like all of these books are connected.
They're all tied together,
and they're
like a big story going on.
If your kid is getting one, they're probably getting the others as
yeah.
well.
This one was really good. This is actually weirdly the first one I read of the series,
and I
mainly because I like Starfire.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was really cool, and it also introduces Cyborg too. So
the DC's Finest line starts this week.
Yep.
These are kind of their equivalent of the Marvel Epic collections.
Yep, but less the focus is a little more or is a little bit less like let's archive these things and more of like let's put together some interesting stories.
But it is by year, just like the Epic collections are.
It is.
But isn't one of them Batman Year One and Year Two?
Yeah, but it's by year. It has the listing on the back of 86 and 87.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
So they will be filling in the other ones periodically?
Maybe so.
Oh, interesting.
We're not 100%.
I didn't know about that one.
There is year markings on the back, though.
Okay.
Anyway,
so that is
yes,
very like
the first
epic,
two
then.
Is Batman Year 1 and Year 2.
Yep.
And then the first year of Superman.
Right, like 25 issues of the original Golden
Single
Age Superman.
Sure.
Yep.
The Energon Universe gets a new collection with Scarlet Volume 1.
Yep.
This is the Arashikage, which is the ninja.
Two different covers, I believe,
yep.
available for the trade paperback.
Exploration of Scarlet as a character and features fun co-stars like...
Jinx.
Jinx.
And Snowjob.
Yep. And Storm Shadow.
Yep.
There is the third Ultimate trade, Ultimate X-Men Volume 1. I guess technically the fourth since Ultimate Invasion is part of this as well.
That's true.
But yes, Ultimate X-Men Volume 1, the Peach Momoko X-Men. And for those of you looking for some 90s nostalgia or just Jim Lee artwork, the Wildcats Compendium 1.
I flipped
big,
through this.
Big giant compendium
yeah.
of the early Wildcats stuff. Which, this stuff's been out of print for a while.
Yeah, it was Jim Lee, and who was the other artist on it? It was,
I don't remember.
Oh, man.
Like, after him?
Yeah, it was the guy who came on after him, and I can't forget. Anyways, I liked all of these.
Yeah, it's got, like I say, it's...
Are you going to get it?
No, probably not.
Never going to get it, never going to get
but
it.
It's cool.
And then we got other single issues. Aliens vs. Avengers number 2 came out this week.
Yep.
That's... There's... It veers a little more wildly Hickman than expected, but it's an interesting issue.
Yeah. Well, and it's sort of like what led up to the point of Earth basically falling.
Yeah.
And it's some interesting stuff that kind of works within.
You see Tony
Ridley
Stark
Scott's.
Make an interesting stand.
Yeah.
Yes, there is more of the alien Ridley verse.
Correct.
That's my little way of saying there's some Prometheus stuff in here.
That's true.
What's interesting, they are treating the aliens almost like it's like a zombie apocalypse.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah. Well, even in that first one, they had kind of like, they basically, you know, had said like, you know, if an alien face hug gets on your face, that's it, you're done.
Yep.
They will kill you trying to, if anybody tries to get them off. And that like, even with the heroes, I don't know, like, you know, like I feel like, oh, well, couldn't Doctor Strange do it? But maybe not by the hundreds and thousands, which seems to be the problem.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's a question of can the human race survive? What sort of wild ends will these sort of heroes in the apocalypse go through to make it happen?
It's Jed McKay Tuesday because we've got a new issue of Avengers, which focuses on Black Panther, and an issue of X-Men, which focuses on Cyclops and Magneto and reveals the story of that frozen Sentinel, as well as why Magneto's in a wheelchair.
Those are two of my favorite issues this week.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Cyclops and Magneto share a beer together.
Yeah.
And there's some interesting talk in the downtime, as well as there is some, you know, pew-pew and fight-fight.
Oh, for sure.
Well, I was like, I felt like I was missing something while Magneto was in a wheelchair the entire time. I'm like, is this just happened for some
reason? I think that has been
reason?
The way since the first issue, but it's some
it
fallout
is.
From, yeah, some,
yeah,
well,
but
the
we
Krakoa
get
thing.
The reason behind
we get the reveal.
It, and,
yeah.
And it was really an interesting one that kind of makes you think a little bit.
Yep.
And this Avengers, that one you mentioned with Black Panther, was a cool sort of standalone story. It fits within the bigger picture. But a really good spotlight on Black Panther.
The new Ultimates, which reveals the status of the Hulk in this universe, which was never seen a Hulk like this before.
It's true.
Very interesting.
He's been in the last couple of issues. And
yeah.
He's terrifying.
Yeah. But I don't think... Did we know about the crossover with the other character that he has?
No.
That was new.
That was new.
And that was interesting. So yeah, big the Hulk throws down with the Ultimates. X-Factor number 4 plus the new X-Force. There were 3 X-Men books this week.
Yep.
And the latest issue of Cruel Universe, the sci-fi EC comic that Oni Press is doing. That's everything from me. What else do you guys got?
Did you mention the Ultimate X-Men trade? Okay. Yes.
That's all I've got.
Okay. All right. Let's take a break and talk about a whole bunch of trailers.
Is that...
All right, it is Trailer Palooza today. We watched a whole bunch of trailers, a lot of weird ones.
Yep.
Let's start with the one that actually is very germane to us, and that is the Marvel Studios Look Ahead trailer.
Right.
We sort of talked about this last week.
Kind
we
of
talked
a sizzle
about,
reel
yeah,
kind of thing.
We talked about the shows last week. We hadn't seen the trailers.
Right.
Right. This is all for like Marvel TV, right?
Yes.
None of this is Marvel movies.
Basically,
right,
the
correct.
Stuff for the rest of this year, and then everything for 2025.
All right. Yep. So each one got, you know, like maybe about 15, 20 seconds of snippets and things like that. What do we got in there?
Daredevil.
Yep, that's a Daredevil specifically. What's it called? Born Again?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What to glean from it? It looked like Matt was talking to the Kingpin, and Randy is surmising that maybe the Kingpin ascends to mayorhood.
They show him like going up the steps of like looks like a courthouse thing, and he's got his major domo behind him. I feel like they're gonna do the, and then they're talking in a diner together. Like it feels like they're gonna do the mayor thing.
That wouldn't shock me. I mean, that actually.
I think they're. I think it'd be the mayor thing. I also think that they are going to do that. Well, they showed Muse.
Yes.
The sort of like the guy from the Charles Soule run.
Right. He is the big
he's
big
the villain.
Villain.
He's fighting somebody, some other superpowered person, and I couldn't tell who it was.
I didn't actually like see much of Daredevil in costume.
Oh, there's a lot of Daredevil
in
costume.
There
is there? Okay.
It's dark. We couldn't see the trailer very well.
Yeah, we're watching the sun happens to be glaring through the window particularly brightly.
But
I've
also watched the trailer like 3 times.
Okay.
We also see the Punisher.
We see the Punisher.
Huh?
But we see him in costume. He's using his little sticks. That have the cable in them.
Yep.
So I'm using that.
That's Billy Club.
You're talking about Matt doing that, not Daredevil.
I'm talking about Matt,
or Punisher.
Daredevil, yes.
Yeah.
Punisher shooting people.
Yep.
And like I said, he's fighting somebody else in like a blue costume.
Oh, interesting.
And it's not Muse. And I'm like, is this their version of Nuke? Are they going to put him in like a Captain America
costume? Did he fight Bullseye in the previous one?
He is. There was a Bullseye in the Netflix show.
Okay.
But it doesn't look like Bullseye. It looks like a blue costume.
Yeah.
And I wondered if it
I
is
miss
like,
that, actually.
If they're going to do a, it's just a quick shot. But I'm very excited about what they're going to do. They also referenced the I'm a Very Good Lawyer bit from his Spider-Man appearance.
Yep.
I am excited to see Daredevil, this version of Daredevil, get a little bit more of an MCU treatment. Clearly they're going to riff on the Netflix stuff. But Netflix stuff was a little boring, and I think it's going to be less boring.
It's kind of a unique unique project, resurrecting a Netflix character that then has gone through the Disney Plus world in She-Hulk. Yep. But it doesn't seem like that version is going to quite stick.
Kingpin was heavily featured in Echo,
right,
and in Hawkeye. So like they've all these characters have appeared in the Disney Plus stuff now,
right?
I'm curious to see what they do with it. What was the other live action? We got a bit of Wonder Man.
Which looks...
At first, I thought it was a period piece. But then I realized that they've got, like, the ring... I thought it was being, like, 70s Hollywood.
Yeah.
Because also Trevor looks a little younger.
Yeah.
But I'm like... But then they're using, like, ring lights and stuff like that. And yeah, I think maybe it is not. But he's going into audition for the role of Wonder Man.
Yep.
Is Wonder Man going to be, like, a media-created superhero or something?
It's possible. Or
maybe that's an action hero in their world.
Yeah.
But he seemed to indicate it was something new. He said, this is the part I was born to play. Although I guess you could say that of like a hero that's been around.
I'm going to guess somehow he gets superpowers and becomes an actor with superpowers.
I would imagine so.
He seems to be palling around with...
Trevor from...
A.K.A. Ben Kingsley.
Ben Kingsley, yep.
From
Iron Man 3 and Shang-Chi.
Yep.
I like that idea. It looks fun. I'm still don't know what they're doing with it, but I'm curious.
It's hard to tell. The main thing for me was that I wanted Wonder Man to be kind of a little bit of a regular guy and or an actor, and
seems
like they're getting that. Yeah. So,
then we got all the animated stuff. We've got the Spider-Man Year One, or what's it called, Chapter One, or Freshman Year, or something like that.
Yeah, Freshman Year.
Animation looks great on that.
It does.
And he's got the weird like. Homemade costume.
Yeah, that we saw in the first Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, it looks fun. I'm excited for it.
The animation's great. Actually, I can say the animation across the board is good.
Yeah, What If is coming. We talked about this last time, that What If, I was disappointed it wasn't on the slate. That's because it's not in 2025. It's in like a month.
Yep.
And I saw a Mecha Captain America.
Yep.
I saw a, looks like a cowboy of some kind, maybe. And there was something else I saw in there that looked like a different take on the Marvel stuff. I've liked season two of What If quite a bit.
I did too.
I think season three is gonna be great. Then we're getting a full Marvel Zombies next year, which I wouldn't be excited about, except that the What If episode of Marvel Zombies they did was a really good take on Marvel Zombies.
You mean they're going to do like a movie?
No, it's a series.
It's an
animated series, yeah.
But it was so good that they're basically doing a standalone story.
I need to backtrack on the What Ifs. I only randomly watched the one that was, the Guardians one, the one that had Nebula?
Yeah, which is fine, but it's actually one of the weaker ones.
It seemed pretty good to me, but I was mainly just taking in the style and vibe of the thing.
They're all pretty good.
It's cute, but it gets better as it goes along, I think. And I actually think season two...
You're talking about the Blade Runner riff.
One. Yeah.
Right.
Not the one you're thinking of. That was good. I like that one.
Yeah, that one...
I was going to say, cute wasn't quite the word I would use
to describe
it.
I thought you were talking about...
That's why I was like,
I thought you were talking about season ones that did the Guardians of Black Panther thing. Season two, I thought was notably stronger than season one.
That one had the Happy Hogan Die Hard riff.
Yes, yeah.
Which was great.
That was also fun. And then they're doing a 4-episode Wakanda story that's going to be a big... revealing sort of Wakanda's history in the MCU, touching on other stuff in the MCU. Sounds interesting.
I'll be curious to see it. History doesn't sound interesting. I need some sort of narrative focus, but...
I mean, it's going to be characters throughout that era. Characters who left Wakanda and interfaced with the MCU at various points.
Okay.
That's what I think that's going to be. And then also, Ironheart, the live-action Ironheart show, which has the Hood as a bad guy, played by... Is it the guy from...
Transformers Beast Wars.
That's it.
In the Heights.
In the Heights. That's what I was thinking of.
He's in a bunch.
It looked like he was a little sexy man in this.
Yep.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But I
he's
actually
be a
think
sexy demon man.
The Hood as a foe is not a bad idea.
Nope.
Iron Man in various incarnations has had sometimes people like oh my god, who did Mickey Rourke play?
Whiplash,
who are not like wildly high level powers. But because the Hood, depending on how they play him, can have big demonic powers, and I'm going to guess is somewhat amped up. I think that could be an interesting match for...
I think so, too.
So,
It looks good to me.
It does.
All right. Star Wars Skeleton Crew. We got a new trailer for this.
You guys hated the first one.
Very much so hated it.
This is the one that is like, it is actually for kids.
Yeah, it's a
bunch of, like,
it's essentially kind
of, I feel like it looks more kiddie than the Goonies.
It's Star Wars Prodigy. It
looks more kiddie than Prodigy to me.
Prodigy was pretty kiddie, Dave.
I mean, I guess.
It has elements of the Prodigy story. It has elements of the Goonies.
I guess they're just literally younger.
Yeah, they're kids.
Yes, they are kids. They have, like, the Explorers, if you guys ever saw that.
Yeah.
Yep.
It definitely has that kind of vibe. This is directed by John Watts.
Yeah, who did Spider-Man.
Who did Spider-Man
movies.
Spider-Man movies?
All of them. All the Marvel ones.
Oh, okay, but there's also like Spider-Man Animated, the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, he did the three. He did the three. Homecoming, No.
Basically, it's kids on a sort of like what's like a weird space suburb, discover a ship and go off in the galaxy accidentally with it.
I have a theory on
who's
that.
Who's the guy with it's what's his name? The actor
Jude Law.
He will kind of, to go with the Star Trek Prodigy analogy, he's their Janeway.
Well,
but he seems like he might be more of a slippery eel of some sort.
Han Solo-y.
Yes.
I think he's a Jedi.
Really?
But some sort of tarnished Jedi.
Yeah.
Perhaps he is sad because he left his brethren behind and they died.
I think he's essentially going to go the way that Kanan did. Okay. Where he's a little bit more, he's not afraid to be a little more scoundrelish.
I'm skeptical of this, but I'm also curious.
The trailer was good.
It's a solid trailer.
They did some fun musical cues.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought this was kind of like high adventure fun.
I am in the highly skeptical place.
Yeah. I think on the spectrum.
Honestly,
here,
even if it's well done, I don't think I have any interest.
Yeah.
Just because it looks, I am weirded out by how normal, real world Earth it looks.
Yeah.
Like there's a dad who wears glasses, and like at a glance, and I know we were watching this on our dimly lit screen. If you didn't know, you would just think you were watching like this is like a dad in like the 21st century, and that those are 21st century suburbs.
It doesn't look Star Warsy enough until they get on the ship and go out and amongst the stars.
And I say that there's a reason for that.
Okay, we'll see.
I think they're having to invent a reason for their cheap budget or something like that. Because, like, things in Star Wars just shouldn't look like... Like, if you had something in Star Wars that looked like a 1940s noir, like, indistinguishable from it until you saw a droid go by or something like that, then I'd say that they had goofed up. That's not what Star Wars should be doing.
Dave, actually, I don't think it's a budgetary thing, because if that's the case, the second half looks so much more expensive.
Maybe they put it all into that instead of the sets.
I don't think so. I think there's a reason.
I think they have chosen deliberate aesthetic. I think they want this to kind of look like a little more like Star Wars could be right outside your next door.
They wanted, for me,
is not something I want.
They're riffing on the 80s, the Goonies, and all that. I think both you and I are a little skeptical of that.
Yeah.
But I also have a feeling it
will be easy enough to write off and that these characters are not going to be showing up in Andor or other stuff I'm interested in.
No, Dave, this is Andor season 2.
I only know that one of the characters is a Max Rebo character.
Yes.
It's a Max Rebo.
He's a little Play-Doh man, yes.
He's a Max Rebo.
I love that.
All right. The weirdest trailer we watched, I think, and that there's some weird trailers, is The Electric State, which is a Netflix movie. With
from the Russo brothers,
written by Marcus McFeely,
who wrote among other things
Winter Soldier,
Civil War, Avengers: Infinity War, Avengers: Endgame, and also should be mentioned Thor: The Dark World.
but he has worked with the Russo brothers.
They have the two guys.
Oh, okay.
They work with the Russo brothers on a lot of Marvel stuff.
Yes.
They also worked with the Russo brothers on The Gray Man, I think.
Yeah, they did.
Which turned out not so good.
I liked it a little bit more, but I do recognize that it was a lesser affair.
Very much so. It's no Thor of the Dark World, but it's close.
Looks like, to me, because it's sort of an apocalyptic future.
Giant robots with weird Disney-looking heads.
Right, they look like giant carnival robots of like the type that never existed, but like they almost look like 1930s cartoons turned into robots. Mm-hmm. And Chris Pratt is traveling with what's her name, Eleven from Stranger Things,
Millie Bobby Brown.
Millie Bobby Brown. But I feel like for me, it looks like it lands somewhere between what's that video game movie with the cars that's apocalyptic? Y'all watched? Not a movie; it's a series based on the old PlayStation game.
Oh,
Twisted Metal.
It looks like it lands somewhere between Twisted Metal and Borderlands.
Also see a little Fallout in there.
And a little Fallout. Yeah. So, but it looked like it's meant to deliberately be larger than life and have scenes sequences with big robots and maybe some smaller robots, too. Yep.
So the one-sentence synopsis is, an orphan teenager traverses the American West with a sweet but mysterious robot and an eccentric drifter in search of her younger brother. This is loosely based off of
There should be a parentheses, and there are giant weird robots.
It's based off of a loosely based off a graphic novel. That was,
oh, okay. All right.
So that would give it the sort of the flair with the giant robots, because artists love to be like.
It's a solid looking kind of adventure trailer that uses somewhat familiar tropes of Chris Pratt looks like a scoundrel with the heart of gold, yep, who's helping her find her folks or whatever. Nothing. I didn't see anything to really interest me, but like it looked okay.
I'm curious about it. It is weird. It is real weird.
I don't really like Chris Pratt.
No, but, nobody likes Chris Pratt.
But
anymore.
I like Millie Bobby Brown. I like Giancarlo Esposito. I like
good people can be bad things. Bad people can be good things.
Of
so.
Course.
I don't love Chris Pratt either. I still like the Guardians movies.
So this is a Netflix. So I think that kind of means it's going to be middle of the road.
Yeah,
as
probably.
With most things Netflix these days.
I the fact that the Russos have done such forgettable stuff after the Avengers Endgame.
What was that Apple one?
Cherry. Yeah. They've done pretty forgettable stuff, and so I don't have a lot of hope for this, but I want it to be good.
They really always do the big action stuff, huh?
Yes.
They've never done anything that's not a kind of a big action.
No, Cherry is not a big action thing.
Oh, is it not?
Cherry is about Tom Holland playing a drug addicted ex soldier.
Yeah.
It was weird for everyone. We got a couple spy trailers. There's Black Doves and The Agency.
Correct. Black Doves is the more, it feels like, action-oriented one with Keira Knightley and Ben Whishaw.
Yep.
Ben Whishaw most notably played Q in the Daniel Craig.
Oh, that's who that is. Okay. You said
Bond
that name
movies.
Like I should know who it was.
Oh, he was like little baby Q.
His little baby Q. I really like him as an actor. He's fun. Seeing him as a shotgun-toting assassin is fun.
He's a spy. He's not an assassin.
It's true. He's a spy.
Assassin's job are only to kill people. Spies kill people incidentally.
Okay.
Very important difference thing.
Sure.
Also, Dave might watch spy stuff. He ain't gonna watch Assassin's stuff.
That's true.
He's not gonna watch either one of these.
He hasn't thrown out a spy clause.
Yeah. This was vibing in, I don't know, just familiar territory.
Yeah, Keira Knightley is playing she's a mom now. Her husband got killed by her old spy buddies, and so she's back in the spy game, and Ben Whishaw is her new partner, ex-lover. It looked very familiar.
Notably, though, that her handler is the woman who plays Julia Child.
If she was Julia Child, I'd be much more interested in this.
Julia Child was a spy.
I know, that's what I'm saying. If she was actually Julia Child as her handler...
I mean, that would be pretty great.
I'd be much more interested in this. This looked like very much by the numbers.
It did.
As did The Agency, but in a different way.
Agency seems to be a little bit more cerebral.
Yeah. It's about how bad it is being a spy and how it's not fun at all, which is not a movie I really want to see either. That's a show, I know.
The people involved, and
sure,
that's Michael a driving force for me.
Michael Fassbender's in it.
Fassbender is an
Gregory
interesting
Wright's
actor.
In
Jeffrey Wright is in it.
Jeffrey Wright, yeah.
All these people that are known to be put in good performances.
There'll be some
stuff.
Good performances in this weak script.
It's possible. I didn't look to see who was directing or who wrote any of it, so who knows. But it is Showtime.
Yep.
Showtime is not the best creator.
They did make Homeland, which was pretty solid for a year or two.
I couldn't watch it past the first season. So
you don't want to.
I love Claire Danes, but...
Yeah.
I feel like, didn't they have something else? What else? What's Showtime?
They've had a bunch of stuff, but most of it's pretty boring.
Yeah.
They had Dexter.
Now, I will say,
this is a
partnership between Paramount and Showtime. And Paramount makes good shows.
They do.
They make some pretty great shows.
They have a really good spy show, a military show, in Lioness.
Yeah. And that just came back for second season. Yep. It's been phenomenal.
Then we've got the trailer for Heart Eyes, which is really a teaser.
Yeah. It's a Valentine's Day horror.
Yeah. But notably, it's by Josh Rubin, who did Scare Me and Werewolves Within, both of which I loved.
Yep.
So... even though this looks like slashery, which is not my thing, I'll be interested in this.
Which one was this?
What's Hard Eyes?
It's like the...
it's the one that was used the You're Just Too Good to Be True and had the stabby thing.
Yeah.
It was kind of hard to read.
Yeah, I couldn't make that one out, get a good sense of it.
But it has, Jordana Brewster.
Yep.
couple of newcomers, although I recognize them. Also, Devon Sawa, if you remember. '90s horror, he was in a lot. He was in, like, Final Destination, he was the lead.
Never saw it.
And then Idle Hands.
The Never Destination, saw that most final.
You've not seen Final Destination?
Nope.
Oh, Final Destination is a good movie.
That's a good group watch for Andy if you're ever looking for another horror group watch in a year.
Yeah.
It's a fun.
Then we got the full trailer for Presence, which is Soderbergh's new horror movie.
It's still a very minimalist trailer that's mostly weird long camera pans through a creepy house.
Yep.
With a lot of, as we were noting, rather lofty quotes like, this one will, you know,
totally
you know,
changes cinema.
Changes cinema, you know, the darkest movie I've ever seen, or, you know, will make you question your life. And, you know, like, it was kind of wild, but we were noting that, like, the people they were attributed to weren't super well-known people.
Now,
Steven Soderbergh has a certain pedigree, and what I'm interested in this is, like, it looks like it's meant to be, like, a sort of serious and perhaps subversive haunted house story. And also, what, exorcism? Is there exorcism stuff in that?
We think so, but we don't really know.
I think it's just like a ghost.
Because he usually has interesting character interactions and dialogue and things like that, that interests me. At least what they're selling it as kind of interests me, because it means that I'm interested in all horror that's sort of a little more ambitious.
I generally like Soderbergh, too, so...
So I will say, this is already... This is,
we looked up the writer, right? This is David Koepp.
David Koepp, who has done everything from Jurassic Park, good, to...
What was the really crap?
There was some
Crystal
really...
Skull.
Crystal Skull. He has done some of the worst movie I've ever seen, and some of the best.
And he's prolific and varied, too, so it's like, it seems like it's really hard to guess what you're going to get with him.
So this must be making the rounds at, like, festivals or something, because there's... It's already got about, like, 50, 60 reviews, and it's at almost a 90%.
Okay.
Which is not nothing. I'm just curious...
It's nothing.
I'm just curious to see what Soderbergh does with kind of his take on horror. I think that interests me.
Yeah.
Because he's never done it.
Yeah, I'm curious.
I mean, I feel
sure.
like in some ways he did it with what was that movie, Contagion?
That was
soul crushing,
like,
pandemic horror.
Yes,
that accurately predicted what it would be like.
Yeah, it's true.
But even just the way that was filmed reminds me. I was like, yes, I'd like to see this guy try horror out.
And I think the lead in it is Lucy Liu, and I like Lucy Liu. So,
interesting. And the last trailer, also weird, is a post-apocalyptic musical called The End.
Yes.
Something I never knew I wanted.
Yep.
So they instead of the usual sort of Fallout apocalypse where you're roaming around wastelands, this is like an undergroundy kind of apocalypse.
They're like Arctic bunkers.
Family's basically bunkered up.
Yeah. But it seems like a kind of a big bunker, not like a little baby bunker.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's some kind of big future bunker, but there doesn't seem to be many people in it. And unlike the way the Joker movie or Joker 2, I guess, kind of tried to sort of hide that it had a lot of musical elements, this one is like, there's going to be people singing in this trailer.
Straight up
so
music. Everybody's singing.
They look pretty good. It all seems a little kind of gloomy, but...
Tilda Swinton and Michael Shannon play the parents.
Yep.
Good cast.
And Moses Ingram is like a woman who comes in from the outside. They don't trust her, but she may be like, there's like a love interest with her and the son, who is played by George McKay, who I don't know from anything.
No, I don't either.
And she is most notable for being in... She was Inquisitor Reva in Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know how that does for her singing voice, but, you know, she was a good actress.
I think... I'm going to guess that they cast people to sing or got good people to overdub them, I guess.
Anyway, it's weird. It says a Golden Age-style musical about the last human family. It's a weird trailer, but I like musicals. I like post-apocalypse. This looks interesting.
Of the ones we saw, I'd say the most interesting ones, even though there wasn't much to glean from the Soderbergh one, where that was that one, for me at least, was that one and this one.
For me, it's this and the Electric State, because Electric State, I don't think it's going to be good, but it's nobody has done that before. So.
I will probably watch all of them.
Yeah, we know.
I know. I'm just stating.
Nick, like the Watcher, will watch and judge and take it all in, and perhaps he will be moved to save humanity when Galactus comes, or perhaps not. Depends on what the last thing he saw was. If it was X versus Sever, then bye-bye humanity.
Yep. All right, we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about. I'm just going to segue right into it.
Okay.
Yep.
But we're running low on time, so I'll probably cut us off at some point. First up, Nick, let's talk about The Substance.
Okay.
You and I both watched this.
Yes.
We had very different reactions.
Is there a way that y'all can talk about it without revealing all? Because I would like to probably see this.
All right, let's pass on the substance to later. Let's talk about the substance last week. I want to say very quickly, Nick really liked it. I did not. And we'll see where Dave will be our tiebreaker next week.
Okay.
Okay, I'll try and catch it before then.
I did watch It's What's Inside, which I think, Nick, you've already talked about a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
But I concur with you on this one. That was a lot of fun.
A rare Netflix... However, it was... Netflix bought it at a festival.
From the festival, yeah.
They did not create it. It was already made, and then they were like, oh, we will buy this movie.
But it's a really interesting sort of body-swapping horror comedy,
I remember when we covered the trailer for it, and it was a fascinating-looking trailer, but also one of those that told you very little.
Yeah, I would recommend it.
And it was one of those trailers that I appreciated that they didn't tell you everything, because there are some neat swerves in the story.
What's the name of it again?
It's What's Inside.
Okay.
I watched Crawl on the advice of my attorneys.
Yes.
By which I mean Nick and Dave.
And not Crawl.
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 I said Crawl.
I'm just...
Were we wrong?
I'm checking.
No, Crawl was a ton of fun.
Yeah.
I watched it with a group. Definitely a good movie to watch in a group. It's for those who don't know, it is about a Force 5 or whatever hurricane.
Right.
Bearing down on Florida.
Yep.
There's a girl who... she's a 20-something. Not a good little girl.
She's a swimmer.
She's a swimmer. And her dad, played by Barry Pepper, is not answering his phone, and so she decides to drive down, ignoring the advice of authorities, ignoring the evacuation.
She goes past blockades and stuff.
She goes past blockades
to
see if he's okay. And he's not. There's a gator.
He's trapped down in the basement, which they have this basement that spans like the whole house and has lots of pipes and walls. And
so it's not a basement. Very importantly,
because
I started watching and someone was like, wait, are there basements in Florida? And the answer is no. There are less basements in Florida than there are in Texas.
This is a crawl
space. It's a crawl space.
Oh.
Get it? Crawl.
I see. I don't know what a crawl space is.
Basically,
I guess it's what that was.
A lot of those homes are built off of the ground a little bit. So
the flooding doesn't get
flooding thrown. Doesn't completely do it. So a lot of the plumbing and things are easily accessible.
At some point, a scriptwriter was looking around in one of those places and was like, what if it was partially flooded and a gator got in with it?
Yep.
With the flood.
Yeah.
Well, I believe,
and then you had to like take on the gator in a diehard game of chance.
Is there a gator farm not too far?
They show a sign saying there's a gator farm.
This is a fun, over-the-top,
knows
it's ridiculous kind of movie with lots of big jump scares and monsters.
Well shot.
I'll say this with the group we were in, we were all having a good time, raucous good time the first time.
Had none of you seen it?
No, none of us. As we're watching it, it was a ton of fun. And then we're like, I want to say you're like 20 minutes in, maybe. She's discovered her dad in the crawl space. he's got a big wound.
Yep.
And we're like, oh yeah, we all know what's coming. We know what the movie's about. But then a gator just busts through the wall. And we're like, oh! And it was like, there were a lot of those everybody yelling at the same moments where somebody gets, where a gator pops out, somebody gets bitten really bad.
You know, I love my kind of like some more cerebral elevated horror and stuff too. But there are great movies like this or Barbarian or something like that where they're an experience, like these kind of horror movies.
It was a ton of fun. And I'm not always a creature feature guy.
Right.
But this was a ton of fun.
And this is why Nick and I are looking forward to the sequel, even though we have no idea what it would look like.
I am fascinated now by what a sequel is going to look like. Because I don't know what you do for a sequel to this movie. I hope that Barry Pepper now is like out hunting gators. And like that's what it's going to be about. But it was a lot of fun.
Obviously, one of the babies survives and takes its revenge.
Yes, for sure. That's going to be what happens. Nick, did you want to mention your next?
Oh, it was one of the final horror movies I watched for Halloween. It was a rewatch, actually, because it's basically an invasion, right? It's an inversion on the home invasion.
Yeah.
They
go out of home and invade somebody else.
Well, no,
there's a home invasion,
except for the home invaders don't realize that one of the people is a survivalist.
Okay.
And kind of turns the tables on them.
Okay.
It's fun. It's directed by Adam Wingard, who now only produces Godzilla versus Kong movies.
There's a lot of these inversion type movies. The people under the stairs had basically thieves, who break into a house and it turns out there's crazies inside.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then there was the one that was the dude who was the blind guy.
Don't breathe.
Yep. And people break into his house, but it turns out he's a crazy blind guy.
Yep. Yeah, there is that.
I guess the trick is, if you're going to home invade, do some research.
Yes, good point, Randy. We want more successful home invasions.
Anyways, it's a kind of raucous, good, fun time. It doesn't take itself too seriously, and I think that's what kind of
encourages
it.
I got about 20 or 30 minutes into this one and quit it.
Oh, really?
Okay. Back. Yeah.
I mean, there's some twists and turns, so it's
okay.
There are some legit fun stuff.
Okay, all right. The last horror movie I watched for my horror watching on Halloween, I guess not the last because then I watched The Substance, but I watched Lake Mungo.
Oh, right. This is this is one of the weird ones that I promote. It's a it's a kind of an unusual found footage
Aussie
movie.
Film.
It is.
And it is about a family that loses a daughter early on. It's all sort of found footage. It's like interviews and that kind of thing. They get in touch with this like psychic who thinks he can talk to the daughter.
And the thing that sort of kicks it off is that the teenage son after his sister has died, he's taking photographs, doing amateur photography, and he starts seeing what he thinks are images of her in the photographs.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, this movie is maybe taking this supernatural turn and it's getting weird.
Yeah. I, as predicted, I was not as taken with this one. I thought it was really interesting. I did not know where it was going.
Yep.
And they kept doing twists and turns. But I found the ending somewhat unsatisfying.
I can see how that would be. However, I found it extremely satisfying.
Yeah. Dave, usually you're the one who's like, I don't like the endings. But this time, it's me.
There's you know, plenty of horror movies where I like the build-up and not the ending. Also, lots of horror movies where I do like a good rap on them.
I want to mention I am reading through Spelljammer, or listening to the audiobook of Spelljammer Memories Wake. This is the Spelljammer novel, which we have on the shelves, and I'm about three or four chapters in, and it's really good. The lead is an amnesiac woman working on like this asteroid. She's got a giant space hamster that's her pet that pulls the cart. She works for this like bitter old dwarf, like doing scrapping.
Sounds like they really are having fun with the setting.
Yeah. And so she gets... It turns out that she is a...
Does the asteroid have atmosphere, or do they have to, like...
They have atmosphere. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and in Spelljammer,
everything ether.
Creates its own atmosphere. It's like, so, like, a person out in the wild space has, like, 2 minutes of atmosphere. But the bigger you are, the more your atmosphere you create.
Okay.
Which is why spelljamming ships can create a longer atmosphere.
Okay.
And planets have self... This is all in the Spelljammer rulebook, which I read... that have self-sustaining atmosphere. So if your atmosphere and your spelljammer is getting a little dirty, you can like pull into a planet's atmosphere and refresh, essentially.
Nice.
It's a kind of a neat idea.
Right. It's sort of based on like old sort of Jules Verne notions of how you would travel through the galaxy. Not that there's a vacuum in space, but there's like sort of a miasma of vapors and stuff.
Because it's not space anymore. It's the astral plane.
Is that the official rethink?
The wild space ties into the astral plane.
This is the book that was written by the writer Django Wexler.
Yes.
Who wrote the book I loved, the How to Become a Dark Lord and Die Trying.
Yeah, I may have to read that now because I'm digging this. His characters are really good. There's a bit early on where the Niyogi, who are like these spider-like slaver types, you're not even supposed to deal with them. It's like you could get a death sentence just for dealing with them. But her scrapper boss is like selling them old rancid meat.
Oh.
And there's a bit, there's some really good effective, like these creepy things that are like, oh, we could just take her if we wanted to. But she is an amnesiac. She doesn't remember what happened to her. She just fell to this planet at some point. And turns out she looks exactly like this pirate captain. And so this famous pirate captain called Black Tongue. And so this married couple of lesbians, a tiefling and a half-elf, come down to the planet, recruit her to run a big heist that they need this captain for, even though this captain is dead. And they raise very quickly. She's like, well, am I the captain? And they're like, we don't think so. So whether or not she is or isn't, I don't know. There may be another twist to that. But basically, she is having to, this very innocent amnesiac girl who's a scrapper, is having to pose as one of the most infamous pirates among her crew so that they can run this crazy heist.
Sounds fun.
It's a great premise. It's a lot of fun. It feels like space adventure, but in that Spelljammer vein. It has me wanting to run a Spelljammer game. It's a really good version of this. I also... you know, like I said, we have the book. If you're a book reader, it's worth picking up. But the audiobook is particularly good. The voices that the narrator is doing are really good. I guess let's wrap it up there. I've got a couple board games. Dave, you have a video game that you're working on. But let's wrap there. We'll have more stuff to talk about next week. And until that time, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.